Art Schlack, Association of Oregon Counties. This morning we're having a public testimony on House 5053, the Oregon Department of Transportation. Association of Oregon Counties, come on up to the witness table.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Art Schlack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And I'd like to take just a couple minutes of your time to ask you to support the transportation growth management portion of the Department of Transportation's budget, especially as it relates to the grants to local government to comply with the requirements of state statutes and administrative rules as it relates to transportation and also the growth management within the state. Local government cities and counties have basically two sources of funds from the state for assistance. One is the grants from the Department of Land Conservation and Development for either technical assistance or periodic review. The other source of funds to assist in the complying with the requirements that the state has on local government is through the Transportation Growth Management Funds. And those are primarily used in efforts to develop transportation system plans that are required under the transportation planning rule. They are also a greater effort. An emphasis is placed on those transportation system plans at the local level at this point as a result of the recent adoption of the highway plan by the Department of Transportation. Although a number of local governments have been involved in development of transportation system plans for the last couple of years, the highway plan now brings forward some new concepts that local government will need to go back and reevaluate, such as the special transportation areas, urban business areas that will need to be designated, as well as including aspect management requirements in local transportation system plans. The other place that those transportation those plans are very important is in the development of the STIF. The concept is that all projects that will be included in the STIF will come from the transportation system plans that are developed in a collaborative process with the state and the local governments, with counties helping to facilitate those. The TGM program is extremely important. It has a benefit to the state and to local governments at this point, and it's the opportunity to use some of those federal funds to help support the local efforts to comply with state requirements and the statutes and administrative rules at this point, and also to help meet local needs. So what I would urge you to support the transportation growth management portion of ODOT's budget, especially as it relates to the grants for local government. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? The transportation growth management, what is the typical amount that would go to an entity, say like a county? The counties are supportive of this. Do you have an estimate of what the fiscal impact would be on the counties?
Mr. Chair,
you indicated it's there to help the counties meet the requirements of the statutes. How much of the actual meeting those obligations would be funded through the Transportation Growth Management account?
Mr. Chair, I don't have that number with me, but I can get it to you at least based on the last biennium in terms of the grants, the dollar amount to cities and counties that came from the TGM. I do know that some jurisdictions have gotten grants, the counties have gotten grants in excess of $100,000 to do the transportation system plans and to coordinate those with their land use activities. So it's quite... It's a fairly large number, Mr. Chair, but I don't have that with me right now.
Do the transportation growth management plans become part of the land use planning that is submitted to the state?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The the transportation system plans become part of the local government's comprehensive plan. They are one of several elements of the plan, and they function to coordinate the land use and transportation elements.
And how flexible are they?
Mr. Chair, there is, I guess, as flexible as the plan is itself. They're subject to revision through the process once they're adopted, but they are adopted and developed in a collaborative process with state, with cities, and the counties working together, and also involving the citizens at this point. So they can be changed and amended, but you have to go through the process.
When a constituent comes to us and says the county is inflexible because they've created this as part of their base plan and submitted a DLP, what avenue approach or response does a typical citizen have? You said just a moment ago having they have to go through the process. Is the process timely and consuming? And if so, it must be inflexible because the counties are in essence saying, don't blame us. The devil made us do it. The state made us do this with the Transportation Growth Management Plan. Is that a nice way for counties to shirk responsibility?
Mr. Chair, in some instances, I suppose I wouldn't want to tell you that doesn't or couldn't happen at this point. There are processes for local government and individuals to submit applications to amend the comprehensive plan as well as the transportation system plan or any elements of that comp plan. If you're unsuccessful in that effort, I would imagine that one might say that, well, you somehow, it's inflexible at that point. I think the important thing is an opportunity to have your issue brought to the table and have it discussed in an open manner and have the local government render a decision. I don't believe under that circumstance it's inflexible.
Okay. For the questions, thank you. Jimmy Luck, did I pronounce that correct? Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm the executive director for the Albany Convention Visitors Association, and I would like to talk to you about ODOT's budget request to continue and improve the passenger rail service here in Oregon. Oregonians are just now realizing the true value of rail service. In Albany, this is a small rural community, we have about 75 to 100 passengers using Amtrak daily. Typically, the people who are riding those trains are high-value tourists, and high-value tourists are ones who tend to spend quite a bit of money when they get to their location. These tourists come to our beautiful city to see our historic resources, the different types of architecture that we have there in Albany, to shop in our antique shops. They also come as business people to and from their jobs. Some of them are just families coming to visit their loved ones. In Europe, rail travel is a lot more standard mode of transportation, and tourists there are more apt to use rail. So quite often our international guests are more comfortable using the rail system for vacation travel here in the States. A couple of weeks ago, a writer, Hilda Anderson, wrote an article about the covered bridges in Lynn and Lane County, and that article ran in the Seattle Times and the Seattle TI. And from that article, we received over 400 phone calls requesting more information about our covered bridges in the area. And ultimately, within the next couple of weeks, there were 500 phone calls from across the United States from those two, or from that one article. Kind of demonstrates the kind of interest there is in the Mid-Valley's precious historic resources as well as its scenery. Right now I'm working on putting together an advertising campaign for the Seattle area with regard to Amtrak travel and the bridge tours in the Linn and Lane County areas. On the 9th through the 12th of this month, I attended the Governor's Conference on Tourism in Coos Bay. And at that conference, I heard from people all across the state who are leaders in the tourism industry say how vital the rail system is to their particular areas and to the tourism that they have in those areas. People east of the Cascades expressed not only their desire to have the rail system reinstated, but the need to have it reinstated to help support their communities. In Albany right now, our rail station is in need of some repair. Quite like the one here in Salem, which is now under repair. I understand that there is matching grant dollars available for that kind of reconstruction work. If Oregon were to lose the rail transportation option, it would be a tragedy and a disservice to the people of the state. And those restoration dollars would go away. Albany certainly cannot afford to lose that matching grant money, nor can it afford to lose the tourists that are brought to the community by the rail service. I feel that you have an opportunity here to demonstrate your leadership and your vision for Oregon's future by ensuring the continued service of the Amtrak high-speed rail system and by supporting ODOT's budget request to continue and improve the passenger rail service in Oregon. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Questions? No, thank you very much for being here. Chuck Berner, Betsy Jones. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I'm representing the Oregon Aviation Coalition. I'm with Betsy Johnson from the Oregon Pilots Association. We just wanted to support that portion of the budget devoted to the aeronautics section of the Department of Transportation, particularly to underscore a couple of program options, 124 and 123 and 124, I'm sorry, that provide funding for some airport improvement and obstruction removal. We thought those were particularly good portions of it. And we would support and to also offer support with or without the aviation fuel tax and jet fuel tax increase option, that the budget is written in such a way to both use those funds effectively if they become available through the revenue process, or to provide a program without that. Also, Mr. Chairman, as you know, we are proponents of Senate Bill 108, and in listening to testimony yesterday from Director Krunican, we wanted to just take a second to respond regarding her plea to the committee to remove collections of the aviation fuel tax from ODOT if Senate Bill 108 were to proceed through the process and separate the aeronautics section into Department of Aviation. I've worked on this bill in two forms for two sessions, and that was the first time I'd heard that discussed in a number of meetings with a variety of folks from ODOT. We had understood and had looked at reviewed again the fiscal impact statement on Senate Bill 108 and had felt that ODOT had agreed to continue that function. Number one, it is fee supported from the agency. It is covered by costs. In fact, the cost this year of collecting the aviation fuel taxes contemplated in this budget, I believe, nearly triples. And third, they do it for other agencies. I guess it just seems like efficient government. The Marine Board's fees are collected by ODOT, and we believe that the aviation model that we're proposing in Senate Bill 108 is quite comparable, and it would be a comparable function. The impact on, I understood Director Krunican's comments, the impact of showing those funds passing through their budget, we believe that's fairly easy to explain to the legislature that these are passed through funds. They already do it with the Marine Board in part. It does provide some very small income, obviously, to the agency for its collection. And it's just efficient government. An agency like a new Department of Aviation would have to go out and contract this out anyway, and would probably go to an agency like ODOT, which has these collections in place and contract with them. We would ask you, certainly, we understand the director's concern over a whole variety of issues, but we thought this one was a small one, and we'd ask you not to, or to review it very carefully.
Okay, thank you. Betsy, do you want to make any comments?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Questions? No, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Lee Hazelwood?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Senator Hannon, I want to thank you for allowing me to give this testimony. I'm Lee Hazelwood of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the Governor's recommended budget for the Department of Transportation. The Commission on Senior Services, by statute, is an official advisory body to both the executive and legislative branches of state government on issues affecting Oregon seniors. Part of the Commission's duties includes examining the delivery of governmental services and making recommendations to the legislature and to the governor. We have looked at the need for special transportation for seniors and people with disabilities and have found the two fastest growing segments of the Oregon's population are frail elders and younger people with disabilities. The demand for public transportation among seniors and people with disabilities is more than twice the number of rides currently provided. Unless the state increases support for keeping seniors and people with disabilities independent and mobile, other state programs such as Medicaid, long-term care will be overwhelmed by dependent seniors and people with disabilities. Mobility-impaired Oregonians represent 8% of the state's population, and state funding for senior and disabled transportation through the cigarette tax and funding from the federal government are flat or declining resources. To provide you with an example of the nature of the problem, the Governor's Commission members have spoken to a Sweet Home man whose doctor has his practice in Corvallis. The man cannot transport himself. He can get to Corvallis by public transportation, but he must stay overnight there, for there's no return trip until the next day. In every community in the state, special transportation for seniors and people with disabilities ranks at or near the top of the transportation priority list. I know Gary Weeks, the director of the Department of Human Resources, has made a number of stops around the state, and one of the largest issues that come up are two things, transportation and housing. Over and over, every meeting that he's been to around the state, meeting with different groups, is transportation and housing. The Governor's Commission on Senior Services recommends the state make a major investment in the independence of seniors and people with disabilities by making 1999 the year for special transportation. And as I close, Mr. Chair, I would like to make a comment, a personal comment, that a fellow that I've known for a long period of time, Mike Marsh, is now working for ODOT, and I want to congratulate ODOT for hiring him, because I've known Mike, he's honest, and he crunches the numbers, and I think when we eventually get him, we'll be able to understand what they are all about.
Okay, thank you, Lee. Are there any questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Yee.
Can I ask Mr. Hazelwood a question?
Sure.
Are you saying that in Sweet Home there's only a one-way bus to Corvallis every day?
It goes once a day.
And only one way?
Well, one way, and then the next day it comes back again, so.
Okay. Have you ever heard of
it? Well, it goes on and on. Well, I can give you another example of that. Salem Transit services a lot of the Salem area. But when you cross the bridge into West Salem, that becomes part of Polk County. And Salem Transit can't go beyond the urban growth boundary. So when you get over West Salem and you're there in this Polk County, you have no transportation. So that's what we were trying to work on yesterday, trying to get that in different areas.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is where a smart jitney system, a pilot project throughout Oregon, could work very well because it's essentially a dial ride system that will get people from point A to point B. I have envisioned that it would be very good for the disabled and the elderly population to be able to dial, call up, and get into a jitney that somebody has volunteered to drive, makes a few bucks in getting the ride, and so that I'm hopefully that bill will be before the committee pretty soon. But I do envision and have envisioned that it really would help with the senior and disabled population when I first introduced it last session.
It will help.
Yes.
Help everybody.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm speaking to Mr. Hazelwood because he's here on that particular agenda.
Mr. Chair and Senator Q-Tip, yes, we've helped work on that jitney bill. We also have Senate Bill 764 that I think would have tied in great with that because it would be a lot more rides for people. A lot of times you have public transportation, but if you're 5 or 6 blocks away, you can't get to the bus stop. That creates a tremendous problem. Thank you, Mr.
Okay, thank you. Cynthia Thompson, is that correct?
Good morning, Chairman Hammond and members of the committee.
Good morning.
My name is Cynthia Thompson, and I'm the Transit Director for the City of Wilsonville, Smart Transit, and Vice President of the Oregon Transit Association. I'm here today on behalf of the City of Wilsonville and the Oregon Transit Association to express my strong support of the Oregon Transportation Network as outlined in the Governor's budget. This proposal begins to lay the foundation of achieving many of the state's mobility and multimodal goals. I would urge you to approve $10 million state general fund and $10 million federal funds for the local service development, capital, and operating for public transportation for the elderly and disabled, and $14 million from the state general fund to connect passenger rail with intercity bus service around the state. I've been involved in public transportation for 10 years, and I am extremely proud of Oregon's public transportation providers. And you should be too. You may not hear from them very often because they're busy out there running their buses, but there are over 200 providers in this state. Oregon's public transportation is truly a story of Oregon's pioneer spirit. Strong will, dedication, true grit, and determination built the public transportation system that's here today. Every story is a little bit different, and each system was built a little differently than the next, but they were built to fit their community, and they all have something in common, a person or a group of people that cared and were willing to struggle to get the system started, to find local resources to meet the demand that is so evident to only a few and yet eludes the masses. Oregon's 200-plus systems did not come to fruition without a local fight. Many got started through bake sales, donations, fundraisers, tough choices through ballot measures for limited property tax dollars that fund police and fire, and transit was the choice of many people in many communities in this state. Your transit systems are funded locally, and you should be proud of that. The cigarette tax only generates $5 million statewide, which covers an insignificant portion of the total cost of the system. TriMet alone spends $13 million a year on their LIFT program. Wilsonville spends over $300,000 on elderly and disabled transportation. We get nothing from the state through special transportation tax or the cigarette tax. So you say, great, keep doing it. State has plenty of other things to spend their money on, and it's a local issue. It's not our problem, and the state shouldn't play any role in funding public transportation. Well, that isn't what the Oregon Transportation Plan says. It isn't what LCDC Goal 12 says. It's in fact, Oregon sets high standards and goals for a multimodal system, and Oregonians are proud of the fact that this state is livable. They want it to be accessible, to have equality for all citizens. This state spends a lot of money on a single occupancy vehicle transportation system, and I think it's high time that at least the elderly and disabled of Oregon are treated equally and have access to services that they, so they can continue to lead productive lives, even when they can't drive any longer. That is livability for them. And I might add, it's probably livability for us, because I'm going to send all of you a recent article that was in Community Transportation magazine about some staggering statistics about how many seniors are going to be dying on our roads, and I don't know how many of us they're going to be killing, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's huge numbers. I think there are two realities that we have to face. Number one, Oregon is aging. At a recent meeting at Tualatin High School, I heard Oregon's United States Senator Ron Wyden say, Oregon is facing an elderly tsunami. That tsunami is coming to Wilsonville. We only have 10,000 people. They've just built three new assisted living facilities, housing well over 300 people, and those people are frail, elderly, seniors needing some assistance. One facility is specifically for seniors with Alzheimer's. And hey, guess what? Wilsonville has SMART, a great public transportation system. Thanks to the Wilsonville businesses, we have an operating budget of over $1 million a year, and 5-6 routes, door-to-door transportation, daily senior transportation, out-of-town dial-a-ride, and it's all free to the user. And believe me, it will not be enough service. Number two, transportation is expensive. One traffic light costs $150,000. The average family spends a third of their income on transportation. How much is that in a cost per trip? And I know some not-so-average families that probably spend significantly more than that with their SUVs, two or three cars. A friend of mine recently said, you know, every time I see a second or third car in somebody's driveway, I think, there's a college education. And I think that's right. We spent $20 million, either 10 or 20, I can't remember the exact figure, to just fix the ruts in the road between Salem and Wilsonville. Believe me, it is all subsidized. The gas tax does not cover it all. Once again, using Wilsonville as an example, a town with only 10,000 people, two major roads, and we have a road utility fee assessed on all citizens and businesses to help pay for road maintenance. Generates $400,000 a year. Our annual road operating budget is over $1 million a year, paid for out of general funds, not gas tax. I could go on. A new interchange, which we committed $6 million of local money, with system development charges assessed on every business when they build a new facility. I care about public transportation, and I believe with all my heart that Oregon's system is a good system. It is limited, and in most places it doesn't begin to meet all the need and the ever-growing need. But I am so tired of justifying our cost per ride, our numbers, our statistics, our need, our subsidies. It's sad to me to sit in meeting after meeting and listen to the mode fight. One mode pitted against another. Jitneys are better than taxis. Taxis are better than transit. Cars are better than buses. And in many meetings I hear, you know, of course, bikes and trains are the best, but and all our problems would be solved if it weren't for Big Bad ODOT or Big Bad TriMet or the huge subsidies we pay for the train and transit. You know what? I have a secret for you. Transportation is expensive, and it is an essential service. If you imagine yourself tomorrow sitting in your house and took away all your services, I bet you the two you take for granted is water and transportation. Public transportation providers have done amazing things with very limited resources, no marketing budgets, an ever-growing transit-dependent community. We do coordinate. We do collaborate. We know our customers. We just don't have enough resources to serve them all. If there's one statement I'd like you to think about that highlights the magnitude of the problem, this is it. We are competing with the automobile industry that spends more on advertising every year than this nation spends on all of its transit systems combined. Our automobile transportation system kills 40,000 people a year. City of the size of Beaverton is wiped out every single year, and most of them are kids under 21 years old of age. Yet, I hear continually, meeting after meeting, well, I wouldn't let them take the bus. It's too dangerous. You would think that a bare minimum, the gas tax, would pay for at least ADA service, since many people end up needing public transportation because they've been in a car accident and they lose their ability or mobility. The automobile industry is not taking any of the responsibility for their product. Citizens, businesses, cities, counties, states, and the nation is footing the bill for the infrastructure for their product, the environmental, the social, the health costs for their product. Yet, we all know the car is a wonderful product. It's a great invention. It's the most convenient way to get around. But balance is the key, and having options is what I think is important. Public transportation won't seem important to you until you need it. Then it will feel like you've lost your rights, as if someone came and took your car from you today and said, okay, figure out how to get around, live your life in a world made for people with cars. But since I can't play God and wave a magic wand and fix the entire transportation system, create a balanced system that works for young, old, and everybody in between, as a start, I would urge you today to please make a commitment to fund the most basic level of service statewide. Fund the Oregon Transportation Network. Fund an elderly and disabled transportation package. And I'm done. Now that the bus lady's finished speaking, and I've been called by many, do you have any questions?
Thank you very much. Senator Shishad.
I got a series of them. One, what do you mean by seniors will be dying on our roads? What does that mean?
Well, because in this article that I'm referring to, and I'll send you a copy of it, I didn't find out about this meeting until I wasn't able to gather it before I got here. The aging of our population, more and more seniors, they're driving. They have to get where they're going. The public transportation system is not strong enough to, and many of them have never ridden a bus in their life. That's another issue. It's a whole almost training thing to try to get them to get on the bus, even if they want to. But they're out there driving, and they're going to get in more accidents. And just the sheer numbers of seniors that are going to continue driving to get where they need to go. No, it's a national.
So what do they do in Arizona and Florida?
I don't know.
They probably haven't dealt with it in some way. They probably have a huge population of retired folks who maybe ought not to be driving. Equality for all citizens. What does that mean?
Well, to me, from the public transportation, looking at it from that perspective, I think that we've built a system that works for the majority of the people, you and me, you know, people that can drive, the system's great. If you're young and if you're old, the system does not work. Just the example the gentleman gave, you have one bus, you don't have any connections to other cities, it takes you an hour and a half. Even with our system, which people rave about, oh, Wilsonville, you have the greatest system in the whole world. When I ride the bus to work, it takes me an hour and 10 minutes. When I drive, it takes me 10 minutes. Now, I do that because I'm the transit director and think I ought to be an example, I guess. I don't know. But there's not enough. The system is just not strong enough. And it is an equality issue. I mean, if you can't drive, you're pretty much out of luck.
I'm not finished.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but she did talk for quite a while, and that still doesn't really answer my question about equality. I guess that means that we have to either provide everybody a car, and those who can't drive, they really must have a way to get around. And by God, we better supply that for them. We better pay for it. The comment, three cars in a driveway, every time your friend sees three cars in a driveway, there is a college education. So that's a value statement, is that there shouldn't be an additional car there because that would be a college education? Or do you mean that maybe that extra car, that third car that's in the driveway, is taking that college student to their class and then to their job, and they're living in their parents' home because they can't afford to buy housing in the area? What did you mean by that's a college education?
Just the cost the cost of an automobile for a person, you know, you can save a lot of money if you choose to live near public transportation services. If you have them and you're in the Portland area.
To PCC or to TFU?
We don't know.
Didn't think so. Big Bad TriNet. Does Wilsonville pay taxes to TriNet?
No.
I wasn't calling TriNet. You said some people are calling
it
Big Bad TriNet. But it's interesting coming from you, Director of Transit in Wilsonville, and your city does not pay TriNet taxes.
No.
You don't want to pay them because you want to run your own system.
Right.
So maybe TriNet is a big bad system. And then finally, Mr. Chair, are you familiar with this? It's something like this. Might not be exactly accurate. From those according to their ability to those according to their need. Heard that statement before?
I have, but I don't remember where.
Does it sound like a good one to you in light of equality for all citizens?
Well, I don't know that I understand your question, but
well, when you say equality for all, it sounds to me like
I don't think the state should fund. The point I was really trying to make is that the public transportation system that is here today is not funded by the state. It's local. These areas fought hard. I've bought the measures. I've been there. I've run the systems. I've ridden them, and I know the people that are there. And that it's local. Local money has paid for it because it's important to that community. And all I'm saying is I think at a bare minimum, the state could play some role in giving. We do play a role in our state's transportation system when it comes to roads, highways, and many other forms of transportation. When it comes to public transportation, $5 million statewide is not, it's nothing.
And we're doing it right now, right? Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
That's
right.
That's what we're doing. So you're not asking for any more. You're saying that should be consistent. And I agree. People in Wilsonville do say that the smart system is good. Wilsonville has done a good job. So I say nothing about Wilsonville doing a good job, because they have.
But the only reason we've been able to do that is because we have large corporations that
right.
pay significant payroll tax.
But they don't pay it to TriNet, so they can
right.
pay it for the smart system. But I'll just finish, Mr. Chair, by saying that the quote that I gave you,
mm-hmm.
that was Karl Marx.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes.
Fred Mussbaum? Is that correct pronunciation?
Pretty close.
Okay.
Chairman Hannon, members of the committee, my name is Fred Mussbaum. I'm a strategic planner for the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates. I'm here today because I wasn't able to make the hearing last week, Tuesday. I had to work that day. I'd like to keep my comments very short. I don't have any prepared comments, but I do believe that you received via fax a copy of this fact sheet, which is the basis of my comments. I just wanted to underscore a couple of items in there from my understanding of what went on in the hearing last week. I just wanted to stress the cost-effectiveness part of the rail bill. That's what I'm here for, is the rail portion of House Bill 5053. The funding of the Willamette Valley Rail Service and connecting bus service to continue what we have already in place, have had in place since 1994, and to build upon that success that we've had there. The rail and bus program is cost effective if you compare it to the alternative. You may not be aware that in the last couple of years, ODOT has spent between $200 and $300 million on just 7 miles of I-5 running through Salem, the east end of Salem. 7 miles, $200 to $300 million, depending on what you include in that calculation. That's just adding one lane in each direction. And we're talking about immediately $14 million for a two-year program that can carry thousands of people. Also want to talk briefly about accessibility. You heard people this morning talking about senior and disabled. Just wanted to underscore the fact that the current program and the program that we're asking to be funded is the only intercity public transportation program, common carrier program that provides fully accessible equipment so that seniors and mobility challenged folks can take that service. It's not specialized. It's not a costly door-to-door type thing. All they need to do is get to the stations along the route, and they can get on that service without any further problem, because they're lift-equipped buses, and the cargo train is a low-floor train with 88 accessible features. The service has been popular. Again, the service between Portland and Eugene has been increasing in ridership 15% per year over the since 1994 when the service first started running. So people are voting for the service with their dollars, taking the train, taking the bus service. And if we do not fund the service for the next biennium, we will lose everything that we put into it. And I think that's all I need to say at this point. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Todd Davidson?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Todd Davidson. I'm the director of the Oregon Tourism Commission. I'm here this morning to speak to you on behalf of the Oregon Scenic Byway Program as part of the Oregon Department of Transportation's budget submitted to you. This program was formalized into its current status in the early 1990s and has been a source of economic diversification and local pride for many communities throughout Oregon. From its very inception, the Oregon Scenic Byway Program was designed to be a locally driven program where local proponents, cities, counties, convention and visitor bureaus, or chambers of commerce would propose routes in the state that could be designated as scenic byways or tour routes. The state then, through the Oregon Department of Transportation, allocates some nominal resources primarily for the administration of the program, the calling of the meetings, the oversight of the Scenic Byways Committee, some signage, and then the project applications for the federal grant program. Allow me to highlight for you just a few of their early successes. Number one, 12 scenic byways have been designated throughout the state of Oregon. Number two, 7 additional tour routes are currently under consideration for designation. Three, a driving guide to Oregon scenic byways has been developed, marketed, and distributed. The Oregon Tourism Commission currently receives on average 1,100 requests for the scenic byways brochure each month. A special marketing program has been developed with the Driver Motor Vehicle Division of the Oregon Department of Transportation, where a mailing stuffer is placed in your biannual motor vehicle registration. It informs Oregonians about the Scenic Byway Program and invites them to have a chance to experience their own home state. To date, in the first 9 months of the program, between 60 and 70,000 requests have been received by the Oregon Tourism Commission for the Scenic Byway brochure. Number five, the United States Secretary of Transportation, Rodney Slater, has designated 2 of Oregon's scenic byways as All-American Roads. These 2 scenic byways are the historic Columbia River Highway and the Volcanic Legacy Byway encompassing Crater Lake. All-America Road is the highest designation possible at a federal level, and it recognizes that these 2 roads are destinations unto themselves. 4 additional roads in the state of Oregon have also been named as National Scenic Byways. This gives Oregon the most nationally designated byways in the country, tied only with the state of Colorado. This resulted in a 2-page spread running in USA Today just a few months ago. And then number 6, because of their designation as state scenic byways, these routes have been eligible for application for federal grants available through the U.S. Department of Transportation through the new T21 program. To date, $3.5 million have been received in 20-some different programs throughout the state to benefit these roads in a variety of ways. These benefits include safety in terms of shoulder improvements or turnouts, but also marketing the route so that visitors across the country and throughout the world are aware of their existence. I can't emphasize strongly enough how important the Scenic Byway program is to the strategic positioning and marketing strategy of the Tourism Commission, because the Scenic Byway program incorporates all the elements of an effective marketing program, assisting visitors to discover the best that Oregon has to offer. It facilitates exploration and discovery, especially in rural parts of our state. And these are very rural areas and communities that not only need but deserve the marketing and visibility available through this program, and the publicity and the awareness afforded by the production of the brochure. The Travel Trade Marketing Manager of the Oregon Tourism Commission, Ms. Billy Rathbun Mosier, reports that this is the single most important tool that she has to help lure German-speaking visitors to Oregon. It's a driving market, and everything in the brochure and the program is laid out for them. Furthermore, she goes on to say that she has been able to convince a major German tour operator to incorporate Klamath Falls and Klamath County in a new tour product that they're going to be offering in Germany because of its significant designation as an All-America Road. In her words, this is the most beautiful and the most useful tool that we can have to help lure European visitors into discovering the loveliest and rural parts of our state. Recent statistics show that Oregon's tourism industry has grown to become a $5.2 billion industry for the state of Oregon. We need this program to ensure that the economic value and impact is dispersed throughout the state of Oregon. But not only the program, but the accompanying grants are essential to the continued health of the rural communities, because this program also serves to sustain and enhance local roadways and thereby the communities that they serve. The Oregon Scenic Byways program, though, not only serves those communities well, but it also conveys a very strong public relations message. The visitors love it, the proponents are enthusiastic in their support, and the Tourism Commission uses it as an integral part of their marketing strategy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Cindy.
Todd, appreciate your presentation. As usual, you're very, very effective in presenting the program. My question is, does any of your scenic roads include tour of Oregon's covered bridges? As Mr. Lutz mentioned before, there are a lot of tourist interest in visiting our unique covered bridges.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, that is very true. Visitors are interested in exploring Oregon's covered bridges. In the first round of designations, there were no tour routes that were proposed by local proponents. Again, these routes need to be brought forward by the city or county, a chamber of commerce, or a convention visitor bureau. However, in this current round of tour route designations, we do have a covered bridge route that is seeking designation as an official tour route.
Mr. Chairman, another question.
Yes.
I guess you know there are, five covered bridges in a cluster near Shire.
Mm-hmm.
I think not only is it important that visitors get to visit these covered bridges, but it's really good tourism promotion for those rural areas. So it'll do two things. It'll help the rural community, and it'll help to promote our historic
site. Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, I couldn't agree with you more, and that's why we're here today on behalf of the Oregon Scenic Byways program, because we believe it does accomplish that goal.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So we should include those color bridges.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to call up three people currently. They're here together. Carol Lynch, Ben Gentile, and Scott West. Welcome.
Thank you, Senate, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carol Lenz. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Portland, Oregon Visitors Association. And on behalf of the Portland, Oregon Visitors Association, the Oregon Association of Convention and Visitor Bureaus, and as the lone private sector representative on the Oregon State Scenic Byways Committee, it's my pleasure to be here today and ask for support for the staff positions and funding for the continuation of the Oregon Scenic Byways Program. The Scenic Byways program was developed as a mechanism to ensure quality visitor experiences by providing alternative travel routes to the interstate freeway that would showcase Oregon's beauty and heritage. But more importantly, it is intended to provide increased economic benefit to the rural communities that are located along these routes. Thirdly, the routes provide those of us who market the state of Oregon, the state and local communities, additional resources as to why visitors should come to Oregon in the first place, but more importantly, why they should extend their visit and stay here within the state. Last year, the state of Oregon was able to capture $3.7 million of federal funds to help local communities improve safety on rural roads, construct turnouts, enhance signage, provide interpretive centers, produce maps and brochures, and then to print and distribute tens of thousands of those lovely Scenic Byways guidebooks. I've been working on the Scenic Byway Committee for a little over a year. In that time, we've been working with 26 different communities and local proponents to rate and qualify these routes for federal funding so that they could implement their corridor management plans. Most of these communities have been working long over 2 years in preparation for certification to be able to receive these federal dollars. Many of these proponents are looking forward to the tourism industry that will be created by the Scenic Byway Program to help provide economic vitality in their communities once again. The continuation of this program is essential to the future of many of these Oregon rural communities. We, the tourism industry, and the thousands of small local businesses along potential scenic byways and tour routes ask your support in funding the positions to oversee this important program. Should the committee believe that this particular program doesn't fit well within the Oregon Department of Transportation, then we ask that you not abolish the plan or the program and the support for this program, but rather consider moving it to a more appropriate department, possibly within the Department of Economic Development or within the Tourism Department. Whether the program exists within ODOT or whether it exists in OEDD or somewhere else in state government doesn't really matter to the citizens of rural Oregon. What matters is that there is a program that is able to administer, review these grants so that those federal dollars, those millions of federal dollars, can be funneled down to the local areas to enhance those local communities. I thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. Senator Duke.
You said that there's a new position in the budget. Is it just one?
As I understand it, I believe it's 2.5 positions.
That's what the funding source is for those? I can't find it in my budget.
Scenic programs, Mr. Chair, are under special programs in the highway division. And it's page 38 is still the amount. Is it's T21 money that they're requesting additional positions for.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ben Gentile. I work for an organization that is called the Visit Group. It is a not-for-profit tourism development organization that is headquartered here in Salem. Our mission is to promote economic development through tourism in the rural areas of the Willamette Valley. I am one of the proponents that you heard mentioned this morning, and we currently have 2 of the 7 tour routes that are up for review and final designation before the Scenic Byway Committee. The 2 tour routes in question are the Silver Falls tour route, which is already a route in existence. We are seeking a slight route change and a state designation, and Senator Yee will be happy that the other route is called Covered Wagons to Covered Bridges. Thank you for your comments in that regard. I'm here today to support the Scenic Byway program for all of our citizens and our rural communities. I'm currently working with 11 rural communities and 2 counties along the routes. I'm here today to give you some examples, not of the benefits necessarily to the visitors, as have been highlighted earlier, but to talk about some of the success stories that the Scenic Byway program has been able to achieve at the very local level. Historically, there have been some communities throughout Oregon that, this is an unkind word, but they have been provincial in their attitudes towards some of their neighbors. They're only worried about their city limits and could care less really what goes on beyond those city limits. The dialogue that has been established through the Scenic Byway program over the last 3 years has really helped break down some of those barriers. Oregon City and West Lynn are talking to each other and actually wanting to work together. The city of Canby has, through this program, decided to do some center striping and sealants on some of their roads that were questionable. They're doing this with their own money. They're developing a bike lane. All of this really designed to benefit the visitors, yes, but more importantly, their local citizens. West Lynn and Clackamas County have been at odds over Willamette Falls Drive. It's part of our proposed route. I wouldn't run a wagon train over that road right now. West Lynn pointed fingers at the county pointed fingers at West Lynn, both of them together pointed fingers at ODOT. Through this program, we actually have dialogue. We may actually get somewhere, stop complaining, fix the problem. The city of Silverton has developed an entire streetscape program. New undergrounding of all utilities downtown, turn-of-the-century lighting, new street trees, new entry monuments. They're actually cutting their water rates 50% for their citizens during the summer months so that citizens will be encouraged to water their lawns, all because of the Scenic Byway program. There's been a tremendous amount of activity that has taken place, and I should add, the visit group does not have the resources to put up the signage and to pay for the local brochures that would be used to market these Scenic Byways should we get the designation. I've run a capital campaign and actually have gone to each of these local communities and given them a budget and said, if you want to play, you must commit dollars. This is not a free ride. The state will not take care of you all the time. This is one where you will have to pay to allow us the opportunity to develop your communities. They're paying. They understand the value. So I echo Carol's comments as a proponent. I really don't know, and I'm not lobbying on anyone's behalf. All of you good ladies and gentlemen will do your best, I'm sure, to figure out if you support the program, where it is housed and how best it should be housed. I'm just here to support the program and say that our rural communities really need it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? None. Thank you. Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott West, and I'm here representing the Oregon Lodging Association and about 1,100 hotels, motels, resorts, bed and breakfasts, and RV parks throughout the state. Also representing the Tourism Industry Council of Oregon, which is an association of tourism entities from around the state. I'll keep my comments brief today. We're here in support of the Scenic Byway program, and specifically for 3 reasons. First of all, these are great partnerships from federal government, the state government, the local government, the private sector. These are ones that really work. Secondly, there are national marketing links for these for entities throughout the state. Nicosia, Port Orford, and to Seaside and the Gorge, Portland, to Arlington, to become natural marketing partners along in these programs. And lastly, it strengthens the Oregon Tourism Commission's efforts on Oregon's behalf. Before me, you heard 3 individuals come up and speak to all the reasons that this program is a good one. We endorse all of those concerns and endorse all of their comments, and also would like to offer our support to the program because we think it's a very good one for the state. And with that, I'd answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
A question. Could you reiterate just again what the Scenic Byways money pays for? Is it is signage, brochures? Does it do any and turnout
do anything actually to the road?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chisa, the federal grant that we're applying for, the $3.7 million that were referenced earlier, did go through a variety of different programs, including safety programs. So it could go to shoulder widening, striping, safety turnout, et cetera. They could also go to marketing programs, interpretive programs, and others along the route as well.
And one other question.
Yes,
when did this program begin? Has it been in existence for a long time? Okay.
The Oregon Feeding Byways program, as it currently stands, was fully formalized in the early 90s, so it's basically about 8 years old as it currently stands. But being able to apply for these T21 funds was a very new development.
First note of the funds looks different from past. To buy in there.
All right. Senator Duke.
My understanding when the Feeding Byways program, when all that decided to pull and move forward on it, was that there was federal money available. Is that, aside from T21 and all, that the feds were really interested? I mean, to some extent, this goes back to Lady Bird Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So are the feds still providing Scenic Byway money to those communities that have chosen the designation?
Chairman, Senator Duke, through the only avenue that I am aware of currently for federal assistance for Feeding Byways program is through the ICT money that was carried over into this current biennium, or the new T21 funds that applies for direct funding for Feeding Byways programs. It's about $150 million that was set aside for Feeding Byways specifically, or through what they call transportation enhancement programs, which Feeding Byways highway programs and others are allowed for. But those are the only avenues that I'm aware of federal support for communities or counties through the Feeding Byways program.
We've been on contract with some folks for a while to determine whether or not Oregon wanted to go in the direction of Feeding Byways. How did we pay for those contracts? I thought there was separate federal money to do that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke, I need to do a little more homework for you on that part of it, but I would be happy to go to the folks at ODOT and the administrator of the Feeding Byways program and come up with an answer for that question.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Chair, while we have both Todd and Scott at the table, we've heard testimony today that the European tourists like our rail service and like our like their rail service and thus want to use our rail service, and that German tourists want to go and see our covered bridges. As a practical matter, do we have local transit that tour packages in each of the various communities where we have these tourist attractions that are such that they can get everywhere they want to be, including downtown Klamath Falls, or do they in fact hire bus services to take large groups of tourists? What's the status there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, specific to your question about the European visitors, this is a group of fiercely independent travelers. In terms of they would tend not to travel in the larger motor coaches and such as you referenced, or to charter motor coaches, or to necessarily buy a prepackaged tour. They will buy a package program, but they will be what we would call in the industry an FIT, meaning a free and independent traveler. They will buy an existing package, but they'll travel on their own or with a smaller party that they have put together, renting cars or using the rail service, etc. So they will actually use a variety of modes of transportation. They may incorporate the use of Amtrak. They may incorporate rental cars. They may be the folks that are actually renting recreational vehicles as well to travel throughout our state.
Call up, Mr. Chair. Just as a follow-up to that, as a practical matter, do we see these folks, or do we know and have information about how many of these folks use multimodal, or how many of them finding that having been here before or having had other folks here before actually just come in and rent the motor home or the automobile? My personal experience is that they'll use one service or another, but not mix them. They won't stop and take a rail from start in New York and then drive all the way to Chicago and then take a rail service from Chicago to Portland and then rent another car and drive to Disneyland and fly to Miami and those kinds of things. If they're fiercely independent and, you know, they want to come and go pretty much as they freely choose to do, my experience is that you've got basically people that use private automobiles or leased automobiles or the motor coaches, the motor homes. And do we have any statistics on that as to how many of these folks, foreigners, really count on our rail service versus the other packages of transportation available, rental transportation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, we do have some statistics, and I will pull together for you a more thorough answer to this question. We do have some information available through the Travel Industry Association of America. Different parts of the country obviously are going to have a higher dependency on different modes of transportation. Rail service in the east is far more predominant than it is here in the west. Therefore, it's a more relied upon source of transportation. Here in the west, what we do find out is, to your point about the multimodal, kind of the intermingling of the different modes of transportation that you noted, no, we don't necessarily see them. What we do see is that our European visitors do tend to be based more private vehicle. It's how they access the region. Are they coming into the region because they've flown into Vancouver and then they're using rail service to travel down through Washington and into Oregon, and then from there they're exploring the region via rental car, maybe back to Vancouver and home again. What we do know is that our visitors from Europe are typically repeat visitors to the United States. They've been in America before, and that Oregon is kind of a new, undiscovered destination for them. We also find that when they do travel to Oregon, that it's a regional visit. It may not be Chicago to here. Instead, what it would probably be is a British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, Northern California kind of experience, and that they will actually spend 3 weeks in our region exploring our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you both. Steve Bryant, City Manager, Albany.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Steve Bryant, City Manager in Albany, and I'm here representing our Mayor Chuck McLaren, who's out of state at the moment, but is a strong supporter of the transportation program and a couple of the elements I want to speak to today. I represent also our City Council, who has met to address these issues, and the League of Oregon Cities, where I served for the last few years as a member of their Board of Directors. Feel a little bit like a kid in a candy store here, because here you are representing the state of Oregon and it's millions in resources for transportation, and here I am, a city manager of a small community that manages virtually every asset or every aspect of transportation services that we've talked about today. We have a bus system that is woefully underfunded. We have an airport that is woefully underfunded. We have a street system with terrific street maintenance needs. We even have a marine facility with the advent of a new sternwheeler operation on the Willamette River that began last year, and we could talk about dredging. But I'm going to limit my comments to two particular aspects of transportation funding, and I want to focus on two things that you've heard, I think, repeated over and over in your testimony over the last couple of weeks. One has to do with partnerships, and the other has to do with vision. What we're talking about, I think, largely in this transportation budget is how can we leverage limited resources to get the maximum available bang for our buck, and where are the partnership opportunities that exist that we can leverage? Certainly the high-speed rail, higher-speed rail, as I heard it referred to last week, it's probably more athlete's name, is one of those opportunities where there are tremendous partnerships available to the state of Oregon. One of those partnerships is with the City of Albany, and I can speak to that because we are making a very large investment in our train station. Through the work of Congressman DeFazio, he took particular interest in a vision that we developed in our community, somewhat through another program that I'm going to speak to, and that's the TGM program, where we saw an opportunity to turn our train station into a true multimodal transportation center, where we want to bring together all aspects of transportation, a bus system with the Greyhound stop, our taxi services, our local transit system, and the higher speed rail into one facility. So there will be true intermodal connectedness between this facility and the other modes of transportation that come together in Albany. Congressman DeFazio was able to earmark a little over $10 million for the acquisition and rehabilitation of that train station through the T21 reauthorization. We're asking the state to maintain its commitment to this program, because without the state's commitment to maintain higher speed rail service, our investment is almost for naught. We're making in total about a $13 million investment in the city of Albany alone, and we're asking the state to contribute $14 million over the biennium. So again, this is a question of partnerships, and is the state going to be there to uphold its end of the bargain? I've attached a couple of articles in this letter that I sent to Senator Yee last week, and some of you have seen copies of this. One is an editorial from our Albany Democrat Herald on why our lawmakers should back trains. Make some good points there. Another more significant piece is one that appeared in the Wall Street Journal last week, and I hope you've seen this. If not, I've attached a copy. But essentially talking about the difficulty that Oregon is having in maintaining its piece of the bargain here. I would encourage you to read that and again, reconsider where we're going with this program and offer us what I would consider to be a fairly small piece of the pie here in maintaining this critical service. I think the second theme that we've heard here and one that you're charged with, and that's the theme of vision. What is it that we envision for the future of this state, and what's the opportunity that we've got here to create a vision that Oregonians can see okay, aspire to? It's one of those things that I think is unique in Oregon, where this is a state where people are most concerned about livability. The rail piece is a component of that livability that I think we need to maintain. People understand that our transportation future is one that's going to change. I-5 is going to get more and more congested. People are going to look for alternative modes of transportation. As gas prices continue to climb, it's going to be much more attractive to get on that train and go to Seattle or Portland or even Salem from Albany. The second piece that I want to address briefly is the transportation and growth management piece. I've served for the last several years on the TGM Advisory Committee, and what has struck me about this experience is here you've got a group of people who represent home builders, cities, counties, special districts, realtors, AOI, that have all come together and have worked with this program at your direction because the legislature set that committee up, I think it was a couple of sessions ago. And we have worked this program to the point that we think it is paying great dividends. It's another one of those visionary pieces where we in the city of Albany, for example, have used the program several times to help create a vision for our community that integrates transportation and land use planning in a way that helps us see the future in a more positive light. It's paying dividends in Albany. It's paying dividends around the state as people enter into these partnerships with the state of Oregon to upgrade their land use plans, develop transportation plans, and really make that link between transportation projects and their land use plans. So I'd be happy to address questions on either one of those issues. The League of Oregon Cities supports both these programs. David Berenberg had to leave early. He asked me to make sure that I reiterated the League's support for these programs. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come back.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Yee.
I think that most people support the idea of speed rail and better coordination of different modes of transportation. But I understand the speed rail itself is not very user-friendly in its scheduling. If a person takes a commuter train to Portland in the morning, the person has to take the train 9 o'clock in the evening to come back or take a bus to come back.
Right.
So I think that there is a large amount of public subsidy in the system. You're talking about a third in fares and two-thirds public investment. This is what we heard at the public hearing last week. So I think we have to have a better user-friendly system to encourage more riders and take more share of the of the riders paying towards the system. I do like to mention a point that was mentioned in the Wall Street Journal article. See, Washington invested $128 million in their, they're going to invest $98 million in their system. And their money comes from a pool of money that received is funding from excise vehicle tax. So that's why they have $1 billion sitting in the fund. Maybe that's one way we can fund the rail, is to have a referral to the voters and let them decide if they want to dedicate some excise tax money for the rail. I think in the long run, we all want to reduce congestion, reduce wear and tear of highways. So maybe that's an idea that the committee wants to look at. I'm not one to talk about
anything that. That would refer back to the voters would probably have to start in the substantive committee. We're not able to deal with it here, and I'm sure if you were to address that to Senator Shannon, you could probably get some help or assistance in that.
Or maybe from the House side, House Revenue Committee.
So, again, it's not something we don't have before. Thank you very much. John Chandler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Building Industry Association. Here to address a couple portions of this package in front of you, specifically what you just heard about the Transportation and Growth Management Program, as well as the Governor's Mobility Initiative. As Mr. Bryant mentioned, there is a workday oversight group for the TZM program. I'm on it, have been since the outset. When the legislature set that the oversight committee up, they made sure that private sector interests were represented. And I really strongly encourage you to support that program in this package and maintain the funding for it. The TGM program has done some very good things. We were skeptical, frankly, when it started, and it's part of the reason we wanted to be on the advisory committee. Having served there and had a chance to work with the other people on the committee, as well as with the ODOT and DLCD staff, what we've been able to do is to structure a series of grant programs and technical assistance programs that essentially provide resources for local government to do those things which the state has told them they want done, either through administrative rule or through statute. Not a bad deal, and we think it's an important piece of the funding puzzle for both the land use and the transportation programs. With regard to the Livability Initiative, the Community Solutions Team agencies have been working together over the last couple of years. Those are, as I'm getting right, ODOT, DEQ, DLCD, Housing, and EDD, Economic Development. That was a program that we were instrumental in getting started and getting those agencies together. And we did that for one very fundamental reason, that it's important for all the state agencies in Oregon to deal with the issue, from our standpoint anyhow, to deal with the issue of growth and economic development, to be reading out of the same book. They weren't. They still aren't. They're getting better. And for this program of having tools available for those agencies to work together, to co-locate, to administer the programs together, makes it much less likely that EDD is going to trip over ODOT or that DLCD is going to trip over DEQ. It's still going to happen. We haven't achieved nirvana in terms of state agency coordination, but we believe this is a very important piece of that puzzle. And from a private sector standpoint, from a builder standpoint, and we don't have time this morning, it would be boring anyway to bring the horror stories in, but there have been many occasions where we have went into direct out-and-out conflict between two state agencies, both trying to do their job. This program of the Livability Initiative and getting those agencies working more closely together will really help eliminate that, and that will help a lot for us during the development business and economic development generally. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your patience. And I'd be glad to take any questions you may have.
Very much. Are there any questions of committee members?
Yeah.
No, thank you, John.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Yes, sir. Please come forward.
Chairman, Senator Hannum, I'm Robert Krebs. I work for ODOT, and I am the coordinator for the Intercity Passenger Rail Program, which is basically the Portland-Eugene rail program. And one of the comments I wanted to make was on the fact that we aren't pleased with the schedule. We know that night train running at 9 o'clock from Portland to Eugene is not the best time. We are sort of subject to the availability of the equipment. Washington State owns that equipment. We lease it, pay a fee to operate it, and our budget request for $14 million will allow us to purchase equipment that we can have in the state and allow us to run trains when our people want to go rather than when the equipment is available. So that is one of the benefits of that program. We are also, we're also working to reduce the operating support for the train system, and by putting schedules on that are more attractive to users, we expect to have a better operating ratio in the future. But I just wanted to put those two points out. We found that the ridership continues to increase, and as it does, it's generating millions of dollars annually that go back into the system to support the operation of the system. And just want to make those two short points.
Okay, thank you. Any other persons who wish to testify? If not, we are adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow, work session on the Oregon State Fair.